Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome to Season 4 of the Sunday Podcast, presented by SportsShoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
This podcast is all about elite distance running in the UK.
We're here to give you all the latest news updates around the sport,
as well as weekly interviews with athletes and coaches.
Stay up to date by following us on Instagram and X at Sunday Podcast.
And make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel too, where we post athlete workout videos, shoe reviews and more.
Thanks for listening, and as always, we hope you enjoy the episode.
Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode. I sat down with Callie Hager-Thackeray for this week's guest portion, obviously coming off that 2:21 that she ran in Berlin a couple of weeks ago. So we'll get into that a bit later on. But Matt, mate, we need to chat about Liverpool. We need to chat about the road relays. And unfortunately, we need to chat about some doping scandals as well, don't we, mate?
We do, man. I mean, summed it up. Where do we start?
Let's start with Liverpool, mate. That's the big news, okay. Isn't it? Those cross-country distances. Because we spoke, a couple of weeks ago, mate, about the changes in Eurocross. Obviously, we've known them for a while, but we were kind of speculating around what the trials would be. But now we know.
Yep. And also on the European Cross, it worries me a little bit because sometimes I feel like it might be a move that World Athletics want to make as well for the World Cross, but we're just seeing it trialed at the Eurocross. You know, the World Cross in, 2026 is going to be in Tallahassee, Florida. Like, will they shorten that? So is this kind of a little bit of a trial event? Yeah, that was just another point I thought I would add. Will sort of cross countries on the circuit, on the tour, get shorter as well? Like, will this be will we see this on, you know, sort of Cardiff in future years, but then also, you know, all the other famous ones, Cinque Mellini, and there's a few in Spain and stuff, isn't there, those famous cross races? So it would be, is this just a move to shorten cross country in general? Obviously, is this to potentially look at it and maybe make it more appealing for the Olympics, because obviously they want to get into the Olympics, that old chestnut, that old rumor. Lots of reasons why potentially they're, you know, we're seeing this be trialed at the European champs this December. But obviously, mate, we've got they've just totally ballsed it up, haven't they? British Athletics. It's seven.
Yeah, I think that's a fair summary, mate.
It's 7.5K. For the seniors, and they've just gone with 8K. I know it's only 500 meters. It doesn't make too much of a difference, but just why not just make it exact? Maybe it's too difficult to turn that Liverpool cross into 7.5K. You could probably just shorten the finishing straight a little bit, shorten the start straight and shorten the finishing straight, and you've got a 7.5K course.
Would seem sensible, right? I don't think that's the biggest of our worries, though, is it, mate?
No, there's more concerns. I mean, we spoke about this, and our worry was, I mean, I've always found the under 23s be a little bit it's always going to throw up different results, how it was previously done with under 23s in the senior race. I just thought it's a lot easier for athletes to kind of break away from one another. It's extremely hard for athletes to track who the hell they're actually racing against for those top six spots. And you know, you've seen athletes come through really well. You've seen athletes sort of go off fast and manage to hold it and maintain. And it's always throwing up some weird results. And always, you know, by the time you get to Eurocross, that kind of six always kind of change and output, you know, the performances differ quite drastically when they're actually in their own age group. But it's going to get worse because we're going to have under 23s peel off a lap early. Like, what the hell? Like, also, under 23s usually make the senior team, right? And so under 23s are going to be leading this race out. You're going to get seniors 100 to 200 meters behind playing a KT. What? It's going to completely muck up the senior race. And it's probably going to completely muck up the under 23 race as well because you're peeling off and stuff. It's just going to be, that is the worst thing. And I said I feared this would happen, and it's happened.
Yeah, honestly, it's bonkers, isn't it? Like, how can you be doing that at this is the pinnacle of the sport in this country, this event.
Fucking hobby jogger stuff. I don't know if it's because they're going to have too many race. I mean, it is a busy day. You've got the bloody short course in the morning. Then you've got all these under 11s races, you know, under 13s and stuff. I think just if it's too busy a day, hold it at a different venue, hold it on a different day. Don't hold it with a league fixture. There's a lot going on. Axe the junior races. Like, do we really need it as bad as it is? Do we need an under 11 UK cross or an under 13 UK cross challenge? No, I don't think we do. So maybe take them out of the program. I don't know, but obviously, adding a race does, you know, add another hour basically to the program, which is already jam packed. And I think we finish just before bloody nightfall anyway, before it gets dark most of the times. Anyway, with that last race being 2 o'clock or something, half two, you know.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things. I mean, that senior men's short course is on at 10:30, so we could put maybe not that earlier. We could put the under 11s race earlier, like if you need an extra hour at the end.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? And then push everything back. I just think, yeah, when people are trying to make GB teams on the under 23 and senior level, you're essentially messing with the race. I just don't think it's on. And it's not, like you say, we're not going to end up with true run races or a reflection of the race.
It's going to be terrible. And like I said, our under 23s are up most of the time. They are good enough to make a senior team. You know, you can usually come maybe eighth and still get your senior vest. You know, usually there's two or three under 23s in that top six overall. So they're going to be absolutely ripping it for 5.6K. The seniors aren't going to know what to do. It's just, oh boy, it is going to be carnage. It's the under 20s. I think the under 20s, the under 17 women and the under 20 women used to run together. I'm pretty sure. But again, that would be the same distance. And they would kind of split it up afterwards.
And some when I see it, so the under 17 and the under 20s, they are running together, both running 4.4K on the men's and the women's side. And
they merged it on the men's as well. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, so
they never used to do that, I don't think.
Essentially, the races we have under 17 women and under 20 women will run 4.4K. Then the same for under 17 men and the under 20 men. And then, yeah, exactly the same. So senior women and senior men will run 8K in the same race as under 23 women and under 23 men. 5.6K. So the distance is all evened up. Yeah. I get why they're making the under 23s run 5.6K though, because I do think it's a big difference running essentially 5K on cross versus 8K even. So I get why they're not just making them run 8K, but just doing a separate race. I'm not being funny. How long is it going to take them to have a 5K race, a 5.6K race? It's not exactly... They're not going to take a long time running that at that level.
No,
not the under 23s in that race.
I mean, on the program as well. I mean, I've been thinking this for a little while, just nationwide. It really bugs me how all of our league fixtures and all of our races are at 2 in the afternoon, at 3 in the afternoon. I just think, like, everyone's used to training on Saturday mornings. People want to get their race done and go home. Like, Also, when you look at like clearing up the course and stuff for these volunteers and officials, like the seniors is the largest volume of people. They take the longest. Get them done at 10 o'clock in the morning, and then just every race gets shorter from there. So the kids are at like 1, 2 in the afternoon. Like a kids race, they do like a couple laps of the field, you know, that first field. You could clear up that whole backfield at Liverpool. You could start taking things down. Like, it's just not like a lot of senior men have families. They don't have families. They got things to do, like, and you know, they can sort of get cracking with their Saturdays and their weekends. Maybe that's unfair on all the parents there, but I just feel like, again, you know, all the road races are early morning, 9, 10 o'clock. I feel like, you know, it should be senior men, senior women should be the first races of the day at all cross country fixtures nationwide. I feel like it would just make so much more sense, and then, you know, the younger athletes just go from there, because, like you say, you can really speed up the program from there on out as well.
Yeah, I don't know if we need to do that. I just think just start a bit earlier. If
we
the
do,
problem
mate.
Is
there's
fitting
senior
it in
men,
the day,
there's senior men running around that field for 90 minutes, like the poor officials and stuff, and you have to like cure. I think we do anyway, but yeah,
I think that's the issue though, because the race is longer and you can take such a bigger variety of times doing it. You don't know exactly when it's going to finish and you're going to start the next one. So I think that's the, I guess the rationale there is that, say, the 1500 race, that's first, because you know that even if someone absolutely bombs, like past 5 minutes, the race is done, you know?
Yeah, but
so
even if the senior men aren't finished, you can tell the difference between senior man and under 13 boy. So,
yeah.
But yeah.
We digress.
Anyway,
we digress. But yeah,
I
it's a bit
really
of a mess,
wonder.
Isn't it?
I think something might change. There's been some serious backlash for this, so I think something might change before Liverpool rolls around. We can only hope. But I just honestly, I feel sorry for the under 23s, and I feel sorry for the seniors who are going for GB spots.
Yeah,
how can you run a race with so many different variables? Like,
yeah, and it wouldn't be so bad. Like, I just don't know why they leave it so late to announce it. The race is in what, 5, 6 weeks' time, and this came out last week. The European cross country changes came in
August, I think August,
maybe
end of August.
Maybe even before.
Really? Yeah,
Right?
we were slow getting to it, but yeah.
Yeah, and like this race it's been on the calendar. Everyone knows about it, but the information doesn't go up until a lot later. So it's. Yeah,
Yeah.
when people are in that position to make those teams, which are serious teams, they need to know exactly what they're training for, I think.
They most certainly do, mate. They most certainly do. So anyway, that's European Cross or Liverpool Cross, shall we say. Let's move on to what, road relays? Some good results there. I mean, on the women's side, bit of a surprise, actually. Herne Hill with a big, big win. Georgie Greck absolutely blazing around there, putting 30 seconds on the next fastest run of the day. Katie Ward, Vale Royal getting second on the women's side. Congrats to both these teams. Some big marks for them. And Thames Valley Harriers as well, making a cheeky bronze. So, yeah, some big runs all round. And a little bit of a changing of the guard. Leeds, nowhere to be seen. Aldershot, fourth. And,
We
you know,
jinxed it, mate.
Down the pecking order as well. Yeah, well, it's, you know, I think Aldershot just definitely didn't have their strongest team out. And, yeah, I mean, Georgie Greg has been in fine form all summer, and she continues that going into the winter as well. It'd be cool to see her on the cross. But obviously, being a Kiwi, we won't see her representing GB at the Eurocross.
Yeah, so, yeah, we did. We might have jinxed that a little bit. I think we particularly on the women's side, we tipped that AFD team, and obviously had Tim on last week to talk about that as well. But, yeah, I think it's, mate, what is good, it's good to see it be competitive and see new teams competing up there. Because, yeah, rather than the same clubs dominating all the time. Over on the men's side, though, the old faithful, Leeds are still there.
Yeah, mate, normal service resumed, man. Leeds absolutely pissing it up. Strong team as well. Fair play to them getting out of the big guns. Sesman, Kiris. But then, like, even people like Rich Allen and Cal Mills, like, you know, these guys are just so strong as well. So, yeah, Leeds, Graham Rush led them off. And from there, they just didn't look back, man. So, Yeah, Emil with a big run, 16:38 round there. Shaftesbury in second, and Cambridge and Coleridge as well in third place. Bedford and County just missing out on the medals. Strong running from them. But made fastest leg today. Emil in decent form, 16:38. Obviously, he's got Valencia half coming up. So pleased to see him sort of smash out a leg at road relays. Zach Mohammed pretty fast as well. He's only a few seconds behind him and Emil. Big second legs. Battersill is in great form. He's someone that you look and think, you know, he's going to feature at Liverpool, and I wouldn't mind betting he's targeting it. But make someone who just dominated the under 20 ranks this winter, Aaron Gebremariam from Birchfield. He won leg one, and yeah, basically need a double check if he's eligible to represent GB at the Eurocross, because yeah, he could go all the way and try and win the Eurocross in the under 20s or the under 23s. Not quite sure which age group he'll fit into there, or if he can even represent GB.
Yeah, so super exciting things coming out of the road relays, and we can start piecing together how we think those Liverpool teams will shape up. But yeah, I guess that's the thing looking ahead. You never know who's just going to rock up at Liverpool and that'll be their first race. And we'll have absolutely no idea what shape they're in, but they'll just smash it out of the park anyway.
Yeah. So we're starting to get some idea. Mate, other news before we get to Cali, with what sounded like a very good interview on her kind of recent success at the Berlin Marathon. We got some, Jesus, Kenyans are busted again. Immaculate Anyango Akolt. She actually got busted last week. I think we recorded the podcast, and then it was so funny. Like, I think we recorded the podcast, and I checked my phone like 20 minutes later, and bang, like that was all over it. Blowing up, you know, another one busted for drugs. This lady, 28:57 for 10K on the road. She finished second behind, of course, Agnes Chebet, who set the world record that day, 28:46 in Valencia. And you begin to question Chebet as well, don't you? Like, her improvement has been pretty meteoric. I mean, Akol's improvement was crazy. I think people were saying she improved 4 minutes in 2.5 years or 3 years or something over 10K. And you know, Chebet is not as drastic as that, but still 28:46 on the roads. I mean, it was a freakish run at Valencia, wasn't it? For these women. And also, again, I remember watching that World Cross, and Kenya just absolutely, just all of those Kenyan women. I mean, Bish Chebet, struggling to even keep pace at times. And, you know, we know how good she is. And just all of these Kenyan women just absolutely throwing it down and over the cross. And it was like, wow, like all six of them. But, you know, there you go. One of them busted for drugs, at least.
Yeah, that's it. And I don't know. Yeah, I wonder how many more to come. So we will see. I think, yeah, not something we want to linger on too much, because it feels like we're saying that a bit too much at the moment. But yeah, I think important to highlight what is going on out there. But yeah, let's chat about Callie's episode, because yeah, it was really interesting speaking to Callie, mate, because she obviously, I'm sure you guys listening have all heard or seen. Kind of the DNF in Paris, she kind of announced that she'd found out about her mum being ill not too long before the marathon. And we essentially spoke about the emotional and I guess just fatigue that it put on her body. Like, she speaks about how her training was going super well, but other things, other noise going on in her life just meant that she felt absolutely exhausted. But with that, the comeback and Berlin a couple of weeks ago,
I think it just shows, though, like, I think there's a lot of runners out there who, you know, might not have something so extreme. They might not be at, you know, happen. Also might not be at the level, obviously, Cali is at. But it just shows, like, mentally, if there is stuff going on, like the impacts that it can have on you and your performance. And you can be, I mean, clearly, you know, you just filled me in. Clearly, she was. Fit as a fiddle, absolutely flying, but clearly just mentally she just didn't have the energy or the capacity to just really squeeze and push and deliver. And I think so many people, whether it be in work or social life or whatever, like, can probably relate to that at some point in their life. And so I think it's it's a little bit scary, like how much of an impact like these things can actually have on your performance, because we just associate with running such a physical sport, which of course it is, but you know, a large part of it is just getting that head straight on race day. I feel like there's a lot of lessons in that one.
Yeah, particularly when everyone else in the start line is also in supreme physical shape, right? They're at the Olympics, the biggest stage on earth. Everyone is physically ready, so the difference is a whole lot more than that. But yeah, so it's great to chat to Callie. Like, appreciate her being kind of so open with some of the issues she kind of had over that Olympic period. But also, like, great to see how well she's done since then, running that 2:21 over in Berlin. But of course, like, she'll tell the story better than me, so we'll just get into that interview. But thanks very much for listening to us. We'll catch you very soon. Okay, first off, Callie, just welcome back, and obviously great to have you with us post Berlin, 2:21:24, and just 7 weeks after Paris. So hopefully we can chat about both, I guess, the ups and the downs on today's pod.
Yeah, definitely. No, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, awesome. Should we start with Paris then? Should we get that one out of the
Yeah,
way, if that's
let's
okay?
just delve into it. Why
Yeah,
not?
perfect. And just I guess the prep going in, because we spoke to you when you knew you'd made the team and training was going pretty well. But for those people who don't know, on the outside, I guess, how was the prep going into the Olympic Games?
Yeah, it was actually incredible. Like, I have nothing to complain about in terms of prep, because it just went so well. Like, training, I think I hit every session, every workout. There was never one where I was questioning my fitness or anything. Like, I was like, wow. And I think everyone around me who saw my training was like, this is world class. Like, you are gonna do something great. But obviously with that, there is pressure. But funnily enough, I just didn't feel the pressure. I was just embracing it, enjoying training, enjoying working hard, and just enjoying being in the shape of my life, ready to hopefully do a great performance in Paris. And I felt like I'd done everything to prepare for the course. So yeah, obviously with what happened, it's really, really frustrating. And it's took me, a lot of, it's took me some time to, like, really, like, take, I don't know, just actually summarize what happened. And but obviously with the marathon, it's not the track, it's very different, and there's a lot that can go wrong. It's 2.5 hours of running, and and with runners, we're not superhuman. We are human, and things go on, and there's a lot of background noise. And I think with Paris as well, like, the marathon was the last event, and I don't think that served me well either. Like, I am a team player. I'm an extrovert. I like to get involved. I like to support my teammates. And I think by the end of it, I was like exhausted. And like, when the marathon came, I was like, oh wow, okay, now it's my turn, let's go. But it felt like I've been there a lifetime, I'm not gonna lie, like, by that point. But on top of that, you're battling everything else, you're like trying to stay, like, you're trying to conserve as much energy as possible, basically, for the marathon. So you almost, like, need to be a bit selfish on the when you're in the Olympic Village and things, because you need to conserve every ounce of energy you can. And but at that point, I'd lost a lot of sleep, and with that, I was losing my appetite, and that does not serve you well in a marathon. And yeah, I learned a lot though. Like, I came out of that and was like, wow, no, do you know what? I've learned the hard way. But I think next time I'll just have to be a bit more selfish and just, like, be like more like, I don't know if she won't mind me saying this, but people like Ailish McColgan, like, just put their eye mask on, they stay in their room, they don't come out and till after their race, like, you don't really see her until, like, after her race, which is so smart. And I think that's what almost like what I needed to do, because I'd already quite kind of, like, really struggled anyway, like, with what was going on, background noise and things. And so I lost a lot of energy leading up to it anyway. But yeah, that's kind of the gist of Paris, for me.
Yeah, absolutely. How long were you in the Olympic Village for before the race?
So
Because
not
obviously I know
even.
some athletes, sorry, yeah, they choose to come in super late and stuff.
Yeah, no, not even that long. Like, yeah, you do have the choice. Like, you can be there as little or as much as you want, really. I decided to go into the village like 3 days prior, which sounds not a long time, but like, you've got to realize that breakfast, lunch, dinner, 2 hours, that's like 6 hours of your day gone to being social. So it is a lot because you're in this huge canteen. You're not avoiding people. Like that's where you have your breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and it's full on. Like you go and get your tray. You go and like get all the food. You sit down with people. You're chatting away, and before you know it, like 2 hours, even more sometimes, is gone. And then you go, and then like you go back to your room for a bit maybe, or you try and watch your teammates in races. Like, I mean, there's a nice little area for that, and you go and watch it on the TV. But me being me, like I'm very involved and I'm screaming at the TV, I'm getting emotional. And like even the night before my race, I'm watching Georgia Bell, and I should be probably in bed doing a whole lot of nothing, but I'm screaming, I'm crying, I'm like and people around me going, Kelly, like you probably should like conserve your energy, chill, like come back down, like you go to bed. But that's the Olympics, and you do want to get involved. And yeah.
Yeah, I think that's it. And because of that, I guess because of getting involved, do you feel like you had, I guess, still a positive experience from the Olympics?
I
Like,
no, I
despite not
did.
racing
I
how you'd
really
want to?
exactly. No, I really did, and I took so many learnings from it. So for me, that's always a win. Like, yeah, it's heartbreaking what happened, but the Olympic experience as a whole was only, like mainly only positive. Like people were so supportive of me. Like whether you've had a good performance or a bad one, and let's be honest, it's very rare that everything hits. You hit a perfect day on the Olympic on at the Olympic event. If you do, like. Well done, like fair play, like honestly, like we all aim to, but sometimes it's the Olympic Games, everyone's on the top of their game. So no, it was, I can't complain. It was an amazing experience, and yeah, good experience all around, really. But
Absolutely. And
nice.
that's great to hear. Like, but without, I guess, wanting to press you too much, like you mentioned the background noise, but maybe even just like in the race itself, like, was there a point where you kind of realized, oh, it's really not going my way today? And I just can't continue, essentially.
Oh God, yeah. Too early, and that's the thing. Like, that's how I knew it wasn't a fitness thing. Because I'm like, fair enough if I like hit a wall, like, even in the middle of the race later. But it was like really early where I was like, why am I struggling? Like my fitness, because I thought for sure like my fitness would get me through. To be honest, like I know there was a lot of mental and physical exhaustion in terms of like lack of sleep and lack of appetite. But I thought the training I'd done was like really solid. So I'm like, there's no way, like I'm, I felt ready. So I thought that would carry me through. But unfortunately, in a marathon, you have to get everything right. Like you have to be on top of your game to get that right. Yeah, it's just very different. So I knew on my warm up, like kind of knew on my warm up, because I was feeling really hot. Like I was like, I am so hot. And I was looking at Steve Vernon, and I was like, are you really hot right now? And he's like, it's warm, Callie. Yeah, it's a bit humid, it's warm, but it's only 16 degrees. And I was like, oh, and it felt like 30. And I was like, oh my God, this is kind of concerning. But at the same time, it was like, Callie, don't worry, because as soon as you start running, it's because we're standing still. As soon as you start running, you'll get a bit of a breeze. There's all the stations where you can get ice, things like that. And I was like, okay, I'll be fine, I'll be fine. But yeah, I think even when the ball went off, I felt a bit dizzy, I felt weird. I didn't feel like myself at all. Like my body was doing some weird things very early, and I was like, oh God, like I am in trouble. And it was just, yeah, random pains I was feeling. Like in my hip, I was just like, my legs weren't moving right. I was getting this sharp pain in my hip, and it was almost like, oh my God, I've got a stress fracture. Like I've not felt like this at any of my sessions. I had no reason to feel any pains. So I was like, this is weird. But the body does some weird things when you're exhausted. Basically, yeah, I got to a point where I was like, if I'd have gone a step further, I would not have had a season. I would have been out. Like that's how it was. Like it was like, I have to stop now. Like, and I also I didn't come in there to like come like dead last in the Olympics. I trained so hard, and I was like, we thought a bad day would be like anything under top, like anything over top 10, like great day would be top 10, which we thought was definitely going to be the case if everything went right on the day, obviously. But like, yeah, so I was like, what is going on? Like, this is not right. Like, yeah, unfortunately, but my body just was not cooperating. But I remember when I went to a heap on the ground, I was just like so exhausted. Like all I wanted to do was just go to bed and sleep for like a week. That's all I wanted to do. I was so done. Like when physical exhaustion hits you like that, it's just, yeah, it's not nice. But yeah, you just gotta come out of it and like figure some things out. But first I just had to go back and just yeah, I don't know. It took some time to process it, but I mean, we all have now. I've got a good team around me, and we sat down and we properly like figured, you know, tried to like summarize like everything and what happened, and yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And how long did that process take? Because I guess it's it would be so easy if say your sessions hadn't been going well, or you have a few kind of times where you bonk on a long run, for example, because then you kind of look and you're like, oh, well, yeah, that didn't go well, this didn't go well. But actually, when it's something that's a bit more mental, I guess, a bit more emotional to do with kind of the structures around, like during the Olympics, how long did it take to kind of really kind of get into some of those issues?
Yeah, exactly. No, I took a few days to just not talk about the race and everything at all. I think I just kind of like I stayed in Paris for a few more days, but just kind of like checked into my own hotel in a nice area and saw my friends, saw my close, like you know, all my family, and we just spoke and just everything about just because you've been in this bubble for so long at this point. Like I've been somewhere it's forever, it felt like, and then on top of that, I was in Paris for two weeks prior, and it just yeah, it's a long time to be like in this, trying to be in this. Well, you've got to be in this Olympic bubble, and it's a crazy time, and it takes so much out of you, and it was just important for me to just not like yeah just put that aside a minute and just figure some things out first. But yeah, I think I was say about several days probably I got back to England, but then there was more stuff happening, like things going on, so it was just chaos as soon as I got back. And then yeah, there was no settling for me, unfortunately. My life just doesn't allow that sometimes. But anyway, I think Tom Craggs rang me about 4 or 5 days into being back in England, and me, him, and Nick really sat down and delved into it. And he was heartbroken with us, like, because he'd kind of like seen my training and helped Nick with a plan, like, for the last, God, I probably had a 24-week block, honestly. Like, and everything went right. So it was like, yeah, we like really delved into it, and we had a long, long chat, and we figured out a lot out. And we just figured that the taper basically wasn't doing its job anymore because of what, like, because of the exhaustion I was feeling. And unfortunately, like, although like I hit every session, although I was able to do everything, it just meant the taper didn't do its job anymore. And it got to the race, and I just was, yeah, flat and exhausted, unfortunately. But no, obviously there's a lot to it, and yeah, and we did delve into it, but it was a good chat, and it was, I, you know, I realize I am human, and there is, you know, things do happen, and unfortunately it can happen at the Olympics. So yeah.
But obviously, look, let's move to kind of the positive aspect and how you bounce back from that, because 7 weeks later, like we said at the start, 2:21, at what point did you know you were gonna, I guess, make the most of that Olympic shape in Berlin? How late was the decision to race?
I think it was like a week and a half before. Like it was, because I was down to run a Valencia. So at the end of the year, I was like, can I mentally get myself through another train? I know I can physically do it. I can always just do it. Like, but mentally, I was like, can I? Like, obviously, I would have had a week or two off. I would have reset, and I would have had to just get to it again and do another block. But I was like, why are we not just banking on the fitness I've got now? Like, I know what I've done, and I know what that translates to. So I just was in my head, I'm thinking, I want to do it soon. And then I'm thinking, everyone talks so highly of Berlin, like they just have so many positive experiences with Berlin's, and I just kept seeing like people like announcing that they're doing it, or like, you know, the star list had come out, and I'm like, I want to be on there, like, what? And you know, like I was thinking, if I get in this last minute, then it's meant to be. If I don't, then, because I would understand if not, because it was a week and a half before. So when I got the call from my agent to say no, you're in, I was so excited. I was so happy. I was like, oh my God, I get a second chance almost. Like, I get to do a marathon that actually reflects my training. And that just meant the world to me. So I was like, no, we're going all in. And obviously, yeah, there was a lot of demons as well. Like, in my head, there was like, oh my God, like, am I actually mentally still strong enough? I'm only like a month removed from the Paris Olympics. Like, am I okay to do this? Is it going to reflect it? Or am I just going to like hit a mental wall again and really struggle? But I just had to like go all in at this point, and was like, no, we're doing it. And like I was just, yeah, like I said, just really like just over the moon that I was in. And Yeah, just did some more train, like do a few more key workouts. What was like, no, it's there. That's, yeah, it told me everything. So when I got there, yeah, it was, I don't know, it was great because it's another city marathon, you know? And I'm like, right, and I'm still new to this. This is technically my second proper marathon. So I'm like, okay, no, like, I don't know, it is overwhelming. And there was, you know, it was a big pressure thing. But I'm just, yes, yeah, so thankful that it paid off in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Talk about the race itself, because did I guess that Berlin course live up to the hype, the expectation?
Yeah, definitely. And I'm one of those people where I like to like try different races, but that is one race I just would happily do again. It was absolutely insane. Like the course is incredible. The atmosphere was mental. Like it was just, yeah, I got the city marathon that I'd always wanted for sure. And yeah, I'm just lucky that it paid off and I was like my legs cooperated in the end. And yeah, mentally, like I went through, yeah, ups and downs in the race, as you would, as any marathon should go, though. Like I was very lucky on my debut that I felt great the whole way. But yeah, I think we were pretty conservative, not as conservative as I wanted to be, but like I was on for around my current PB at halfway, and I was like, okay, like, but I knew I then needed to at some point like pick up the pace, which was at that point was frightening because my legs were like doing some weird things again. I know I was mentally like, yeah, hit a bit of a wall, and I was questioning whether I was gonna like get PB. And I was like, I've not come here to like run slower or I wanted to PB and show that I was in good shape. But yeah, it had some tough points, but no, yeah, it was good in the end. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you obviously got it done in the end. And one thing I wanted to ask you as well is, I guess the training, because I know when we spoke to you after your original debut, you were talking about how kind of it's not crazily different from maybe what you had done on the track, because I think you were quite endurance focused anyway. And I remember we spoke to you years ago now about even that 5K you ran, which came off kind of the first attempt or potential attempt at the marathon. How much has that changed? How much your training changed, like over the past kind of year or so? Maybe I guess pre-Paris, and then the little bits you did ahead of Berlin.
Yeah, it changed a lot leading up to Paris, in terms of volume. Like in terms of volume, like yeah, I just was like, I do need, I if I want to do well and I want to be up there with the top girls, I need to be doing like those kind of numbers, I felt like. But I just, at the same time, like I think I was like, that was just a bit of an insecurity and a bit like, I don't know, like you just think you need to, but every athlete is so different. Like I've just realized that I do better with higher intensity zones and less volume, and that just works for me. And I went back to that again before Berlin. I was like, no, I'm gonna like my training, because I was doing 120 mile weeks typically leading up to Paris, whereas I went back to that 80 to 90 miles, if that, leading up to Berlin. And I mean, obviously I only had a few weeks to play with,
Yeah,
but
sure.
at the same time, like I just know, like I just feel so good in that range, and like I can really hit some solid sessions, what give me so much confidence. So like I love hitting that 10K half marathon zone a lot. And so when I do come to do the marathon pacing, I'm like, wow, like this is a jog in the park. Like, but that just works for me. I know a lot of people, they like to just keep reeling out that marathon pacing, but I hardly ever hit that in training. I'm more like I said, I like the intensity. So yeah, I did go back to that, and I think I will go back to that in the future as well, because I've just realized that yeah, just works for me, and that's how I get strong.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure you and Nick have already debriefed the race and stuff. Was that, I guess, that training something that you kind of taken forward? But maybe something about, is there anything in the race strategy as well from Berlin that you're like, oh, this is where we could find a couple extra minutes? Because you're getting to the point now, it's like, look, it's only a minute and a half and you're talking sub 220, and then we're really talking like not just elite, but it's the elite of the elite, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just think it's being conservative for me is like always a good thing, but then you've got a risk not being with like the main pack. So it's like, do I take that risk and go that little bit faster sooner, so I'm like in it and I'm racing? Because I do best when I am racing. So when I'm with a pack, like that fires me up. So mate, yeah, it's something we've got to really like think hard about going into a next big marathon. And because I know it's there, I know, yeah, that's just the start for me. And I know it did feel like, on the most part, I was very fortunate. It did feel real. I felt so within myself for a lot of that race. I was saying 95% of it, I felt completely within myself. There was only that little bit where, and that's just because of the what's been going on in my life, to be honest. And that's why it was a proud moment, because it's like, God, if I can do that with my current like mind, like my current mindset right now, then I know I've got so much to play with. And that's the thing with the marathon, it's so mental. It is, if you can mentally get yourself in a great spot, you're laughing, because like, yeah, the training is half the battle, you know, like it's just the mindset, what's the next part? So I think that's the key here, and just fully having faith in doing a bit less. It's not always the 120 mile weeks what get you to the top of your game, especially with someone like me, like the athlete I am. I was very much more 5K background for a while. So no, we're just realizing that now, and hopefully that will, yeah, serve me well again over the next few months. But yeah, you don't want to burn out. Marathon training's hard, so you don't want to, you know, burn out or anything. You want to do everything right.
Yeah, and for you then, moving forward, what I guess the goals in the marathon? Is it to go and hit another major, hit a time, or is it about getting back in that British vest and kind of competing at the championships? Obviously, I'm sure both are important, but what's the one that really fires you up in terms of the next few years?
Yeah, exactly. No, obviously, like everyone puts so much emphasis on the Olympics, don't they? And it is hard when you don't get it right. And I can see why, you know, like our greats, for example, Paula Radcliffe, like I look at her career and I'm like, wow, she couldn't have been any better. But she apparently looks back at her career and she's like, yeah, but I didn't succeed in the Olympics. And that is something I would love to do, obviously. But at the same time, like, is it everything? Like, I know it's just one race, but everyone puts so much emphasis on it, and I think that's why it can go one way or the other. But no, yeah, obviously, like, I'm excited about my future in the marathon. I'm barely getting started for sure. And yeah, I do want to keep, you know, just taking chunks off this time now and chasing, you know, I've got Paula Radcliffe's British record to thank for the crazy time. But no, it's exciting, and I do think I can keep, you know, getting chunks off this time and moving forward and doing something great. It's going to be hard, but no, I'm looking forward to see where else it takes me. But I do love, you know what I'm like, I do love the track as well, and that's not over yet. So I'm lucky I can still go back to that, and I do think that those shorter distances complement the marathon and the half marathon and things. I think they all help me, and all that, because otherwise I would be like just training and training for the marathon, and I would have no chill, and I would probably get burnt out. But because I've got that to fall back on, I can do the 5K, I can do the 10K, and honestly, like, I've still not touched the surface in what I can do in those events. I truly believe that. So I do want to see what I can do in those events as well, and I think that's exciting. Why not? Why just put ourselves in a box? So no, I will be like definitely like dabbling in a few things in the next few years, and not just the marathon, because otherwise I'll go mad, I think, if I just solely focus on just one event. So yeah.
One event coming up, of course, is Liverpool. Would we ever see you back on the cross? Maybe even.
I loved the cross. Genuinely, I really did love the cross. I'm from Sheffield, so I'm used to like God grass training. Like we did a lot of our sessions on the grass. Even in Australia, we train on a grass track, and I love the hills, the mud. Like that doesn't bother me. But yeah, I don't know about this year. Maybe one day you'll see me back on cross country. That would be really cool.
Yeah, I think so. Like, yeah, I think maybe perhaps you're right. This year would be a bit too soon of a turnaround, but I think, man, I always talk about just the potential excitement of seeing, I guess, our best runners from 1500 even to the marathon,
Yeah.
and all kind of compiling in those kind of men's and women's teams at Eurocross
Exactly.
would be unbelievable. But look, like, yeah, Kelly, I guess that wraps us up pretty much. But thanks so much for I guess being open and honest about some of the issues with Paris, and congrats on kind of coming back from it as well, because it's great to see.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
The Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell, and if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Goodbye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.